My name is Edras Rodriguez Torres, and I'll be doing the interviewing today. And you are?
Cynthia Elizabeth Casillas.
And your work here at the Resource Center is?
I am the program manager and site director of the Living Arts Out of School programming. And that means we offer art and dance classes for youth, really anyone who's over 3 to adult, we can facilitate classes to them.
Okay. Start off by talking a little bit about your growing up and your life experiences early on.
Okay.
Can you talk about where you were born and where you grew up and give us some background?
Well, I was born in Ciudad Guzmán, Jalisco, in Mexico. And I was there until I was 6. Then my father came first to Chicago, then moved here for work. And I guess he was still in that youth, because my parents are on the younger side. And he finished school and decided to try something else. He's an adventurer, I guess. So he decided to come here, and he was, I can't remember how old he was, but he came here, and during a summer break, because my mom is a teacher, we decided to come and see if we liked it, and she liked it, I guess, enough for us to stay longer than she had hoped for, maybe, because she really enjoys being a teacher, and she had to leave her career behind. So with the whole language barriers, and even though my parents are professional people, they weren't allowed to continue that lifestyle. They had to go into different career paths. My father went into construction work, and my mom pretty much stayed on as a housewife. I started fourth grade, and third or fourth grade. So I started the immersion of the language, and I pretty quickly began to speak it. And the hope of the school was to place all these kids in bilingual school or bilingual classes. And I was in the class for maybe 3 months. At that point, my parents decided to switch me to the full English classes. And I saw that a lot of the kids that were already in the bilingual class had been in that class for a long time. And it was pretty much like a recess or like a detention, really. You weren't really covering any of the subjects you needed to cover. It was just babysitting time, I guess. So I definitely appreciate that my parents made the effort to switch me to the regular class, if you will. From then on, it was a struggle to adjust for my mom because, like I said, she really enjoyed her career. So we did a lot of going back and forth. So I went back to school. I was here until I was in sixth grade. Then we moved back to Mexico. And I was there for a summer in school. So it was like summer school because I needed to make up for the fact that I didn't graduate with my sixth grade cohort. They don't allow you to just move up because of age or whatever. You need to graduate with a group. So I had to go back and repeat that. And at that point, my mom decided to come back. So I didn't really get to finish that. Then I went to St. Vincent because there's a bad reputation with Earhart, which is a middle school. And my parents didn't want me to go there. So I tried that, but in being in the classes in St. Vincent, it was pretty clear that the kids thought they could do whatever they wanted because it was a private school. And eventually I found out that one of the teachers was being poisoned with chalk, and she eventually died. So that was pretty tragic. So after that, I believe we went back to Mexico. And I was there for I can't remember if I actually, because I know I stopped going to St. Vincent. So I guess we went back to Mexico and I was there for maybe a summer. And then we came back and I started at Earhart. So eventually I had to go there anyway. Which my experience was fine. I didn't really go with the bad crowd. I pretty much do my own thing. So I really like to, I really went for extra homework, and I wasn't just sitting around and looking for trouble, I guess. So after I finished with Earhart, that must have been eighth grade.
Seventh?
And then I went back to Mexico and I finished what was middle school there. So it's a lot of running around, as you can see. It's hard to keep up with. After there, we came back another time, and I went to Western, and then I was there for ninth grade. We went back to Mexico, and I started high school, officially, I guess, in Mexico. So I did my full 3 years there, and I went to college, which is a technical college, so they focus a lot on technical careers. So I went into industrial engineering, and then high school, I specialized in computer technology. So after that, my mom decided to come back again. I didn't want to because I think I was at the age where I could say, you know what, that's it, I'm going to stay here. But I guess something pulled at me and I came back with her again. I started at, or I waited because I couldn't just enroll at Wayne State. I talked to some counselors, went to Western, and they advised me to go to Wayne State, which I did. I went to the CBS program.
CBS?
It's a Chicano Boricua Studies, which now is something different.
Yeah, so the class.
Mm-hmm. Which must have been 6 months in, and my mom said, I'm going back, and I said, I can't go back with you anymore. I'm staying here, so this is the one time that we've stayed on for more than, what is it now, 14 years? So I finished my career. The CBS program wasn't for me. It was too, I don't know what the focus really was, what the goal was for students who acquired the CBS scholarship to, there was a requirement. So if you got the scholarship, you had to take, I believe it was 3 courses with them. But I didn't really see the goal of that. Like, why do I need to take these classes? What is it gonna teach me? Is it gonna help me with my current career path? It wasn't really clear. Which in a way it sort of helped me because it was sort of an easy A. Being that I had just come back from Mexico and I needed help with my writing skills because I hadn't had any college writing at that point. So that sort of helped, I guess. But in a sense, you could do more with that money as opposed to just having it be kind of like a extra class, or maybe it could be geared towards you need to take this math class or the science class. So I went for business administration, which was one of the interests I had in Mexico, but I decided to pursue the engineering instead of the administration there, so I chose to change that here. And I focused in marketing, which was interesting because the whole experience was interesting because I was pretty much the only Mexican woman, the only Hispanic person in class. So it was kind of hard to assimilate to that experience, being the only person, and am I really supposed to be here? Why are not more people here? Because, you know, just in every, as in every other race, you see people that are this and that. Why are not more people interested in educating themselves? So that was, it was sad, I guess.
Can you talk about some of those experiences on campus at Wayne State? first as a student, did you engage with the student body? And then talk a little bit about the work you did with the Office of Government and Community Affairs.
Mm-hmm. I did not engage as solely on the CBS group. They had the sororities, which I had some friends, but I never really... I went to some meetings, but I never really considered that a path for me, because the way they came off as, this is your family now, this is what's important, and I thought, well, I have a family, and it's just, it didn't work for me. So what I did was I spent a lot of time in the library. I worked as a tutor. Then I worked as an assistant at the Labor Studies Center. And that was the majority of my on-campus participation. I used a fitness center and I went to some games, but I never really participated with a group. So with the sense that I really enjoyed what it was to be at Wayne State, I always wanted to go back and get a job there, but I've applied many times and it's never really worked out. I don't know what it takes to get a phone call, but so I decided to, well, let me see if I hit a lot of patches of no employment, because I never really had the time to say, well, I'm just gonna go and intern. And I don't think that there's a big need for counselors to look at your grades and say, well, you know, I see that your grades aren't that great here. Why do you think you should continue? Or maybe you should reevaluate, or maybe offer some sort of, you need to go to tutoring. And then make it really clear and how important it is to get an internship, even if it's just one. Make it a requirement, because in my case, I really didn't see how my career was gonna, like my studies were gonna help as a career. Even though I knew I really liked to write and event planning, then I really became involved with volunteering. So that helped, and then I thought, well, maybe I could go back and just intern this time, since I don't have a job anyway. Mm-hmm. So I contacted WDET first, and I was there for, I don't know, 3 months, and I was working with their contest page and updating information and that sort of thing. Then I decided to contact the community affairs. Mm-hmm. And I was very lucky in getting accepted into their department. That was an experience I really enjoyed, because it opened my eyes to what I could possibly do. I would love to go back. Unfortunately, their budget is very tight and it can't be helped. So for now, it continues to be a dream. And then I found this opportunity, which is a lot of community engagement. So I really enjoy that part, creating the relationships and being a liaison between what we do here and trying to reach other students, other schools, creating events, assisting with the events, updating forms and updating processes, meeting the parents and their needs. A lot of times it's not really job related, but I get to help them with their personal problems, so I got to do a lot of resource. Like a resource kit, because I have a lot of ways. Like, oh well, you can contact this person. What's the word I'm looking
for? So you're a link, basically, between those that need resources and the resources themselves.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that's what I really like about this job.
Okay. Talking about the people in Southwest as a community,
mm-hmm.
Can you talk about how Southwest has changed throughout your lifetime, You know, from your periods here and moving back to Mexico, mm-hmm. how do you see it overall that Southwest has changed both the physical space of Southwest and the buildings and also the people? How has it changed?
Well, my life here started on 23rd Street, and the bridge decided back in, what was it, 91 maybe? They already had their vision of what they wanted to do with this area. And it took 10, 15 years for it to start happening. So, and then they have their continuous plans that we know now, what they want to continue doing, and we're not seeing exactly what it is, but apparently it takes a long time. So we started there. My dad sold that house. Then we moved to 24th. He sold that house because they also wanted that land, but not everyone on that street sold. So 24th is still occupied. I don't think that they actually need it because they already used all of that area on 23rd. Then now I'm on Wing Place, which is sort of like a closed, dead-end street. So that's on this side. So I've been living on that side of the bridge, and then now I'm on this side.
And by bridge, you mean?
The freeway.
The freeway, the pedestrian bridge.
Yes.
Okay.
Well, there's a lot more Mexican presence now. I remember on one of our trips to Mexico, we went to this resort, and one of the persons there was Canadian. And he said, there are no Mexican people in Detroit. And I guess that's the belief. But at that point, there weren't a lot of people. But now you see a lot more Mexican presence, and there are a lot more markets. And now you start seeing those pollo asado things, where before you didn't see any of that. And that's very present, especially in Jalisco. So I don't know, these people may be from Jalisco. Apparently there are a lot of people from San Ignacio, which is in Jalisco, but that's to the northern area of Jalisco, and I'm more from the south. Mm-hmm. So a lot of San Ignacio people are here, from there. I guess maybe a lot of families, friends, and definitely a lot of, even this building, it's completely, I don't even remember it when I was a kid. So I don't know if it was already here and it was just, it's been renovated over the years. I know that in 2000, I guess, they had the idea of it becoming an actual market. So commerce related, not really services like it is now, but that's what it's become. It's a lot more vibrant and you see a lot more foot traffic. Yeah, it's just vibrant.
Why do you think those changes have happened? The people coming in and some of the buildings, both the decay and sort of the gentrification? Mm-hmm. You talk a little bit about what factors are playing into those kind of changes?
Well, I guess money is a main thing. I don't know how much the Southwest Solution presence has changed. I mean, they've taken over a lot of buildings and made them apartments. Their purpose is to house people. So they've used the buildings that have just been boarded up and used it in that way. I don't know exactly how they get their rent from people who don't have money, but there's two sides of that. A lot of people are happy that the buildings are being used, and then a lot of people are angry or upset that Southwest Solution has taken up so many of the buildings and what they're doing with the buildings. So, I don't know. That's one aspect, but a lot of it is also, like you said, the gentrification factor. So houses have been sitting there now in foreclosure, or some people can afford to buy them at, you know, $1,000 to $5,000, which is the cheap side, I guess. And for them, it's cheap. For some people who live here, that's still expensive. So, in some ways, the residents aren't really benefited by that because they still can't afford it. So why not have maybe some help for them to purchase these properties, as opposed to some people who aren't really familiar with the area and are just coming because it's hip again, or because they can afford it, or like, what is the real intent? Are they actually going to incorporate to the community? Or
so, with the current state of Corktown, which is right nearby, do you think that there's any sort of spillover about the gentrification and the influx of people that are coming in, the non-Hispanics and the non-Detroiters that are coming in to a neighborhood so close? Do you think it's a possibility that that could happen here in Southwest?
Oh, it's already happening. And actually, this area that we sit in now, it's considered Corktown.
Sure.
So I've had a real problem with that because I've tried to find a place, and it's rent is just, it's 800 plus, or they talk to me over the email, so everything's fine in print. But then when they meet me, it's like, oh, I guess I didn't realize that you were Hispanic, or they don't know what, right? But I had someone actually, not in the area, but it applies to this because it was in Woodbridge. So I went over there and she questioned, well, why would you want to move here when you people like to stay in Mexican Town? So that was pretty shocking. And it was pretty offensive as well. So she's like, well, I didn't mean to offend you. I just didn't know how to fix my comment. Why can't I live in that area? Why do I have to live in this area? And even now that this area is concentrated with people purchasing things on like Hubbard and Vinewood and even the nice mansions on Boulevard, Grand Boulevard. So yeah, it's definitely making things very competitive, and I don't know that there's a solution to that. They're not doing anything wrong, I guess. So just, I guess, that's a way to keep, to pluck people out.
You mean current residents?
Yes.
Current residents. What do you think, how do you think that can impact the sense of community and the culture here in Southwest? Do you think that that change could be positive or negative?
It can be both. We can start seeing the changes with the, the garbage situation. It was first the city of Detroit was managing, now it's Rizzo, and apparently they can provide the recycling option, the curbside. So I don't know if that's because of the new people moving in the area that are asking for these services, where before maybe I could have asked for that and it wasn't possible. So I've been, what I'm doing is I collect my recycling and I drive it out to the Recycle Here Center on Holden. So, but now that they have more of a voice that, well, we need the service and we can actually pay for it, it's a possibility. You know, the structures are improving and you can start seeing more of these farm gardens, and so that's positive. I actually went to my local library at Bowen and I saw that Kresge brought in one of these posters requesting or putting out a application for people to apply for a grant, Whereas 5 years ago, I never saw Krasny even coming to Bowen. You know, why now? Now you have qualified people that can apply. Well, you think the people that were here before weren't qualified? And then, you know, Southwest, a lot of people always think, oh, it's Mexican town. But, I mean, it's pretty diverse. It's not just brown. It's black, white. So it's hard to answer that question because of my perspective. I could give you the Hispanic response, but it's really... So there's a lot of tensions, I think, because people... This group wants to say, well, it's my area. And then the other one wants to say, well, it's my area. So why can't it just be the area? When you see people trying to push you out, that's not good. But when you're existing, coexisting, helping each other, I think that's what maybe the locals want to see, as opposed to sensing that territorial, well, now I'm here and I'm going to make things better and you have to go.
What do you think are some of the biggest challenges that face Southwest currently? So what are the biggest challenges for people and for organizations as well?
Trying to get people engaged and educated. I have a big problem with educating my parents and having them see that it's best for their children to come to an activity as opposed to just being at home or being punished to not come here because they're behaving badly. That's not really a punishment. That's money. People can't afford extra activities. I guess just their sense of their stress, their depressions, they don't know how to, they don't feel heard. That could be a reason why they try to stay away, or they may not feel included. Maybe the selection of activities aren't as broad as we think they may be. Even though now there's this here at Frac, and then we have Matrix next door, and then Renew the World is in front, and then the Roberto Clemente. So there's stuff for everyone. It's just a matter of getting up and doing it, which is, that's where the X of the equation lies. Like, how do you solve that, and how do you engage these people? How do you make them see that you're going to be better after this? Or do they not see that they have a problem? And or if they do know they have a problem, they don't really want to know about it or resolve it.
You started to talk about earlier some of the attitudes that persist in the community and how that relates to community resource centers and people from outside the neighborhood coming and helping. Can you expand a little bit on what you were talking about as far as people's attitudes towards resources?
Mm-hmm. Well, as a volunteer, I've volunteered with the cleanup over at Midtown several years. And every time I go back, I think, well, you know, do people actually want outsiders to be here and clean the area, or is it just they have no interest, they can't help it, and once it's been cleaned, why not keep up the work? Or again, does that go back to the depressions of people and they're still in the same building that they can't help and improve? So why clean the outside? Or I mean, these are all questions that may be unanswerable right now because we don't know what the case is. But yeah, I feel like there needs to be more education in terms of this is your area. You need to keep up with it. And I don't know if they make that connection, I guess, because I'm not in their shoes, so I can't really answer that. Mm-hmm. But in my case, I would think, well, I've seen how, like I said, right now, especially with the whole people losing their homes and other people taking them, and apparently there are a lot of homes on foreclosure, but now the problem is, you know, kicking these people out of their homes. Mm-hmm. So, or the water rights. What can you really do with that? You're supposed to pay your bills. If you don't pay your bills, you don't have that service. But can you really just, I mean, people need water, so they die if they don't have it. So you have that responsibility in your mind saying, well, I'm going to shut up your water, and knowing, you know, they may die. So it's very complicated, and while I don't really see those cases immediately here in my surrounding life, it's happening out there, and I don't know how in my interest of volunteering I can really help with that, but I think things are going to get worse before they get better, unfortunately. And now that we saw those cases, and, well, the cases we've seen recently on TV with all these race-related issues, how is that really going to help our current situation of gentrification and identity issues and I belong here and you don't? Instead of collaborating, is that going to create more tension?
Right. Do you think that it's possible that something like that could happen here in Detroit and in Southwest, as far as a breakdown of relationship between police and, you know, the residents? Or is it, or perhaps has it already happened?
You know, I'm not aware of that, but even if the police isn't involved, I can see that if things continue to be so tense, I hope that the riots don't repeat. That's all I hope.
So, I'm getting the sense that you think that it's a possibility that the tension is there. How do you see Southwest changing? I know you talked about you feeling like it's going to get worse before it gets better, but can you talk specifically about how do you see it changing, both from a community sense, so the people, and also what sort of changes do you see in the neighborhood itself, like in the buildings or anything like that?
Well, I guess people still need housing, so that's something that needs to be tackled. And while I've seen more buildings being built, I don't think it's quick enough, or the quantity is not enough. I don't know about the quality. Is it just, well, we need more jobs, better preparation, kids need to be in school and keep learning and being challenged, and I don't know that that's actually happening. Like I said, in my time, going to Earhart, which was a middle school, or Western, which was a high school, was a big taboo, and that continues to be that way. So now with Southwest closed and a lot of those students coming to Western, is there enough attention for the students? Schools closing all the time, teachers not being able to handle the load, teachers not having the support of administrators. So that's really where the key is, getting the kids educated and prepared so that they feel qualified, ready, valued.
Do you think there's enough here in Southwest to make that happen, both in terms of people and resources and just a desire to make a change? Do you think that that's here?
I think it is. Because people are still trying to fight for their rights, for their spaces, for their lives. So it's possible, but I think they need more nourishing. They need more positive reinforcement, more training, just more time. And so value both the employees so that they can in turn bring that to the students, and the students can feel satisfied in their lives, where maybe they don't have that at home, but maybe if they start evolving, their parents see that. Maybe the parents themselves can start changing their attitudes and all create a better outcome, better lives. Maybe create more entrepreneurs. If we don't have the office jobs maybe that are necessary for everyone, or create more relationships with colleges and universities, mentoring.
Can you talk a little bit about your organization and the work they do here in the community?
Mm-hmm. Living Arts started off as a dance organization back in 99. And it was dance solely until 2013, at which point we moved to this building here. And we opened the art component of our services. So for dance, it's always had a youth dance ensemble. And what they do is they perform in the community. They just performed at Noel Night, actually, at the library. So they do these kinds of, you need to be auditioned, you need to go to an audition and be accepted into the group. And this is more an intensive group. They take a lot more classes than a normal, just recreational student would. For the art, we don't have that different track of intensive and recreational. But a lot of our classes in the art media are very intense in the sense that they learn a lot about video animation, video production, photography. We used to have a multimedia class, so we did a lot of different things with that class. We have drawing, art, and a family art workshop. And that class, that's very unique because it could bring in the community. Parents participate in the class, so it creates that bond between the child and the parent. And it also allows the parent to have that time to be creative. Like I said, we offer classes for children 3 to adult. And in the summer, we offer a family music class for toddlers, 0 to 3, in which the parent also gets to participate. So we have some classes where we include the parents so that they can create deeper bonds with the family. We also have in-school programming, and it's art-infused. Primarily DPS schools. I don't know if that answers your question.
What sort of resources do you help the community with?
Well, primarily, my duty is to get children enrolled in our classes, and that way having them be productive in their own lives. But as I said, on the side of all that stuff, it's also I support the families a lot with other things they may need. And just creating a presence and allowing the student to be creative and innovative in their class, and hopefully not only be in the class but carry it out in their lives.
And what sort of response do you get from the community and from parents?
They really like the program. They always say, it's a shame I didn't know about it before. What we do primarily is bring flyers to schools, and that way they get distributed in classes and the students get to take it home. Mm-hmm. Not all of them. As you know, as a child, you don't always, understand the responsibility of things or the gravity or the importance. So they don't all take it home, but most children that do come and register, and the parents are really happy. I have students who take one class, I have students who take 10 classes, and they can take as many classes as they can attend, in the sense that they can make it here and are going to be responsible and understand their commitment. They are free to do that. We do charge for classes, but if they can't afford it, we can assist them with a scholarship. But yeah, they're very happy that the kids have something to do, that they're learning. And at the end of the year for dance classes, we have a showcase, so they get to present whatever they learned in class at the showcase in June. Mm-hmm. And we also have, now that we have the art component, we also have an exhibit for the art pieces to be exhibited.
Where is that exhibit at?
Well, it's been in Allen Park, the auditorium that has been chosen many times. I don't know if that's going to be there this year or not. We haven't established that, but it's in the same building where the actual dance performance is. That we have a side and we could just distribute or display the art.
Okay. Just have one final question.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any other story or life event or topic that you would like to cover that is of importance to you that you would like to get on the record?
Well, again, community plays a big role. Ever since I was a child, I've had a lot of help in my life. So that's why I see myself as a volunteer. I'm trying to get involved in different things. I have many interests. So I understand the need for some people to be helped when they need to be helped. And then in that way, helping them to raise themselves up again and become self-sufficient and at some point realize someone helped me get here, so it's my turn to give back. So if more people gave back, I think we'd be in a better place.
Very good. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for including me.